Welcome to the latest episode of The Grower and The Economist. I'm Michelle Klieger, The Economist.
And I'm Peter Kanjoyan, The Grower.
Each week, we team up to tackle the biggest challenges facing small and medium-sized growers. We're one part grower and one part economist, just like your business.
Welcome to this episode of The Grower and The Economist. In today's episode, Michelle and I are pleased to invite as a guest, Dr. Carrie Peters-Raymond. Carrie is with the J.R. Peters Company, and those of us in horticulture and the greenhouse industry know J.R. Peters by name. We know of the lab and the fertilizer products. Carrie, welcome. Please take a moment. We'd like to hear about the family history. It's a multi-generational business. And also, we'd like you to describe your career path.
Great. Hello. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Michelle, for having me join you today. I always love chatting with people in the horticulture industry about what we're doing here at J.R. Peters. So yes, my name is Carrie Peters. I am the third generation of my family's business. So the company is called J.R. Peters, and we're the manufacturers of the water-soluble fertilizer Jax. So some people don't even know J.R. Peters anymore, and they're just familiar with Jax. But this is our 75th year of our family's, you know, interaction in the horticulture business. And my grandfather started in 1947 making Peters soluble plant food. So it was Peters Professional, and it literally started in his mother's garage, which is slightly scary in a way if you think about that. But the history was there, and he started with a lab in his mother's garage. He would go around and test water and soil and give nutritional recommendations to growers all across the country. And then finally, one or two, or I don't know how many growers actually, said to him, you know, this is great, great information here. Why don't you just blend the fertilizer that you think we need? You know, we need so much nitrogen, we need so much phosphorus, so much potassium, and bring a little sack of that back to us. And that's literally how our company started in 1947. So it's been back under family control since the mid 90s. My father, Jack, who's the fertilizer named after, has been just fantastic businessman and scientist to really take us where we need to be. I joined the company in 2004, and that was after I finished my PhD at University of Maryland. My path was kind of cool. I wanted to be a pediatrician. That's what I always thought I'd be great at. But when I started to do my end of biology things, I just really struggled with a lot of things, especially the sight of blood. So I ended up not being able to make it past dissecting things and decided, after much cajoling from my parents saying, there's a lot of things to do with plants and plants don't bleed. And that's kind of how I came back into joining the family business. So my background was a bachelor's in biology. And then I went for my master's in soil science and agronomy. And I worked with the USDA with plants that hyperaccumulate heavy metals. So I really like jumped into the like heavy metal side of plant nutrition, and then switched from my PhD into straight up horticulture, looking at plant nutrition of all different types of greenhouse plants, and joined the company in 2004. So today my title is formulator and master crafter. So I'm the designer of all the blends that we release here at Jax. Anything that we decide to come up with that's a lot based on our lab that's on site, I put together. And that is what we do here at J.R. Peters.
Well, thank you for that introduction, Carrie. Your dad and I go back a ways. I have fond memories of seeing him in his lab coat,
yeah,
on trade show floors in the J.R. Peters booth. A wonderful individual. Carrie, Michelle and I particularly enjoy bringing in as guests members or participants in the horticultural supply chain who are also family businesses.
interesting on the family businesses when the families encourage the children to come back and when they discourage in that process. And I hope that you either got to pick or had fun. I love the title Master Crafter.
That's kind of my finesse on it. You know, I was classically trained from my grandfather. He was the chemist that originally, you know, came up with all the original Peter's blends, 20-10-20, 20-20-20. I mean, even a blossom booster back in the day, that was all of what he did. The original hydroponic 5-11-26. He really was like the crafter, and I learned from him. And my take on it is just a little more of the like alchemy and the choice of raw materials. So I do really think of myself as a master crafter, a little differently than maybe he did, but same core values for sure. And that's what is cool about our family business. It really has transcended generations with the same kind of ideas, you know, and, you know, we all get along, which is sometimes not happening, but yeah, it's kind of neat to see us transcend 75 years.
That's very cool. And so it's a two-part question. Let's handle the first, and then we'll move on. So I think our growers are all experiencing the supply chain disruption and crunch and this skyrocketing price of fertilizer that we're experiencing this spring in the year 2022. So I would like, with your perspective, your position in the supply chain as a sourcer of raw materials and blender, master crafts person, to help us understand what's happening. And then once we finish that conversation, I'd like to finish off today's episode with some tips or pointers that you find yourself giving to customers, to growers, as to how they can stretch their fertilizer or how they can otherwise administer their fertilizer programs to help soften the blow that we're all under with the rising prices.
That sounds great. Yeah, that's a question I get asked quite often, as you can imagine, being that I do mostly, you know, I run the laboratory, but also do a lot of the tech support. I get that question from so many different type of people. And even my neighbors, they're like, oh, how is this affecting you? As a company, we were lucky in a way. And John and I, my husband John is the president of our company. And we started running the day-to-day in 2016 and really started to see some shifting even as early as 2019, where it just didn't seem like our supply was as solid as it used to be. And what I mean by that was, back in the day, as you can all imagine, things were done by a handshake and a verbal, hey, thank you, thanks for being our customer. And as an old school family business, we value those relationships. But what we started to see, that things were a bit different. We started to get in materials that weren't of the same quality that we always expected. So we really implemented, between 2016 and moving forward, a quality control program that monitored our raw materials coming in so that nothing was loaded into our facility or even off a truck until we did some testing to make sure it was correct. And in doing that, we were really able to get an eye on the supply chain. What we really started seeing is, as soon as we heard something about COVID, and I'm talking end of 2019, before I even knew what was going on, like, we started to see some hiccups in being able to get the supplies in the same quality that we wanted. As COVID continued, we saw these hiccups and we really ramped up our testing. So we were able to ensure that our Jax products and the products we make for others maintain that high quality. What we're seeing now is slightly different than that. There is this increased demand, maybe fueled a little bit by hoarding, you know, that people are freaking out. Of course, they're like, I got to get this, I got to get that. So our relationship as a global supplier isn't as affected by that, because we forecast 48 months ahead. So, you know, we have our relationships with several suppliers of each different raw material, and we have these forecasts, and they have been more than not arriving at the right time. the only delays we've been seeing is a little bit shipping things. Like there were a few times this year that vessels got stuck at ports or got held up in ice, like crazy things like that. But they eventually arrived. So from our end of it, the relationship is important. So the relationships we have with these global suppliers has allowed us to be strong in the supply for the materials that we use. It's been a challenge. You know, people have, if we've been on it every single day, it's almost like daily conversations with every single person. It really has allowed us to feel a little bit more secure than what it might seem, because people, like I said, people do ask me all the time, am I going to be able to get my jacks? And it is secure. It's just a little more challenging.
I mean, the first thing that jumps out at me is that 48 months planning ahead is something that's so important and critical in agriculture, with your planting seasons and your breeding seasons and all of those. And I find in a lot of discussions, it's hard to get people to plan ahead. It's hard to get people to request their seeds 18 months in advance. We've had conversations about how much inventory you should hold. And so it's fascinating that as a company, making this part of your business model has given you the flexibility to adjust and survive and apparently thrive in this time right now, where you're getting the things you need, you are confident in your quality, and that just seems like what we're always talking about, that small businesses have the ability to pivot and change and weather because they're smaller and they're nimble and they're paying attention to these things, and you seem to be a great example of that.
I have to give credit to our suppliers too. They have allowed us to continue these strong relationships and have stuck to their word. So we ask for something and they do make it happen. Like I said, little hiccups and whatnot, but, and also our team at J.R. Peters, the crew that we have there, the blue crew, I mean, they're a hard working bunch of folks. And if it wasn't for their willingness to go out and have conversations, not send an email like, am I getting this? No, having a conversation, building that relationship, I think that's important. And I find that in our industry, and maybe it's a positive of COVID, I feel like we are all again reaching out to each other, you know, and are trying to connect. So I'm hoping this is a change for the positive, that we're all like feeling like we're one green industry working together for good, you know.
That's a good point to make, Carrie. And when Michelle and I started the podcast 3 years ago, it was as COVID was setting in, and we were concerned about how that first spring was going to go for growers, as you most likely were concerned. We were pleasantly surprised that they did well. And I think it's exactly what you're saying. We need to connect. We need to reach out to one another as an industry. Something that you brought up about this 4 year out that you plan, the 48 months, Carrie, I think is consistent with a train of thought Michelle and I are developing. And that is, we seem to feel that the economic environment that we're in is beginning to reject a bit that philosophy of just in time. Or the question we're asking is just in time out of time in this climate? And I think what you're describing is reinforcing that. We've heard stories, Carrie, as I'm sure you have heard, of large growers who are now putting up storage facilities to buy pots and containers 2 years in advance, where for the past decade, they were being told by business experts to just buy it in time and only what you need, right?
Yeah, for sure. Very interesting because, you know, those of you listening, if you've ever visited our facility, and we are going to have an open house at some point this year, we're a lean manufacturing facility. So we actually operate to not keep things sitting around. I mean, we make water-soluble fertilizer. The last thing you want is to buy your fertilizer from someone who made it last year and kept it in a warehouse. So we try and make the freshest product possible to be able to fulfill our customers' needs. But yeah, just in time is difficult now. Out of my whole involvement, I've been with working, getting paid for the company for 18 years now. this is the first year that we have a 6-week lead time. And that even with COVID, we weren't as bad, but a combination of the orders that we have in-house and some labor issues have caused us to have this lead time. So it's very difficult to say, call us and say, I need this tomorrow. It almost cannot happen anymore. And we used to be able to do that a little bit more.
Yes. How long does it take you to make the water-soluble fertilizer? So with that 48 months, is that your projections or does it take a long time to mix it?
The process of making water solubles is fast. We can make up to 35 batches, which is 2,000 pounds at a time, in a shift. Currently, we're running 2 shifts almost every day of the week here at our facility. Yeah, I mean, last year we churned out almost 21 million pounds of fertilizer. So the forecasting is more of like getting this delivery of product fresh and we almost get it in and use it, get it in and use it. That's what we're trying to do, the lean side of things. It's like an orchestra of having everything work together and having products shipped out to the customers.
So I think what I'm hearing, Carrie, there's a hybridization taking place. You're kind of adapting to the times where the lean philosophy, which is almost synonymous to just in time, that philosophy is how you're producing the product. Yet on the input side, you're mapping out 4 years ahead of time. So it's like you're as Michelle says, the smaller operations can pivot more quickly and move more nimbly. And it seems that you're adjusting to the times and the pressures that we're under.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big planner too. Like in order for us to release a product, it takes almost 2 years of formulating, testing, registration. So it sounds like a long time, but in our world, it just happens that way. Like in order, one of the formulas we're releasing that's registered for release June 1 is a lower phosphorus part A for the hydroponic hemp and cannabis production for leafy greens and stuff. And it has a lower phosphorus kind of requirement. And that took us 2 years. And in doing that, it's easy kind of to forecast, wow, what would sales be in June? And we literally look at every aspect of what we're doing and just plan it. It sounds maybe cumbersome, but it's just organization, and we have a bunch of organized people.
Carrie, I want to end this part of the conversation with a little case study, and I'll preface it by saying what I'm about to report is no pointing of fingers to anyone. All right. So 3 weeks ago, I was into my local distributor. J.R. Peters also offers us some of the straight nutrients. And I'm working on a greenhouse experiment, a greenhouse tomato experiment. So I went into my distributor needing some potassium sulfate. And all they had in stock, I only needed a few pounds, but all that was there was a 25-pound tub of J.R. Peters potassium sulfate. And I needed it to boost the potassium as the tomatoes are coming into maturity. I ordered it and then found out that the 25-pound tub had a retail price of $154.
Oh my gosh.
Now, I purchased it and brought it home, but Carrie, I sat and looked at that tub for 2 weeks and finally returned it and just could not get myself to spend $150 for 25 pounds of potassium sulfate. And again, I'm not pointing any fingers. It's just what we're living through right now with the cost of fertilizers.
I've heard that situation a lot too. And when I look and see on the web, because people do tell us some raw materials are obviously coming from Russia and Ukraine and Poland, and almost anything in the European Union area is kind of impacted because they can't get what they're normally getting. So they're searching for other sources, which in fact then affects the demand and supply of these other, you know, raw material suppliers. We've been seeing increases. And honestly, we were just talking about this the other day. I think this was the second week where we did not get an increase this has happened. We've been seeing weekly increases in almost every raw material since 2020. Well, end of 2020, like January 2021, I would say, to the fact where, and it's not like, oh, you're, this price will go up at this time. It's any PO that's in the house right now, it's affected. So like I said, we forecast, we try and, you know, see what the price impacts would be, but our suppliers give us price increases that are immediate. It's difficult to do that in the horticulture industry because of the way people purchase things and buy. If you buy at a show in October, sometimes you don't have to pay those bills until June or February. So I would think that potentially some of that would change, and maybe that's impacting some of the prices, but we have significantly seen increases here. What we've been trying to talk to our, we go mostly through distribution, is that we're passing along what we're seeing. We're not making extra margin. Like my dad always says this funny thing. He says, how do you make a small fortune in fertilizer industry? He's like, you start with a large one. But we have been passing along prices, but that does seem like a lot. I can tell you, we just revamped our straights. It's called Jack's Elementals, to try and make it more efficient in that, to try and get some of the labor out of it. So we used to do things in those tubs, and those tubs were now super expensive. We were like, oh my gosh, we cannot pay $20 a tub to send. Nobody will even want that. So we redid the packaging and made the sizing more efficient and just released that in March, maybe. So people have the ability to buy some straights a little more affordably from us. It is crazy, Peter. You're seeing increases in things that don't make sense.
Well, I would add that just on how quickly that price goes up, that I was in a conversation last week and it was about gasoline, and I assume it's going to be the same type of experience. But when the prices go up, the price goes up really quickly because everybody is paying attention to how much it costs and you're really price sensitive. If it used to be $100 and now it's $110, you're going to try to shop around and find that lower price. And so because of that, everybody raises their prices very quickly because consumers are paying attention to it and it's available. But once the price starts to go down, which it will, once the price starts to go down, if you did walk out with a $154 purchase and now somebody told you it was only going to be $135, you're not shopping around so much. You're just excited that you saved $19. And so that's part of the reason why the prices go up so quickly and down slowly. And so my guess is part of what we're seeing is your input prices going up, the price of labor going up everywhere, the price of gasoline to transport these materials to you, the price of labor to run the shop that you tried to purchase this at, and then everybody saying, look, consumers are willing to accept a higher price right now. Let's move while we can. And if we overshoot, we can always drop the price a little. And I mean, carry is just one piece, but it's not, it's a lot more than just carry getting in raw materials, using a lot of brain power to make these products, and then a lot of labor to package them and get them to you. But there's also other people between you and carry that touch the product.
Oh yeah. And we, like I said, we spend a lot of time looking at every piece. We make sure that we're not overshooting because honestly, we usually don't see anything go down, which is unbelievable that you would think there would be some price fluctuation in there. But so we try and be as conservative as possible when we have to impact our customers because we know it's difficult to raise your prices in some situations when you've committed to something. Try and be there as much as we can to, you know, just make the most price sensitive cost out there for everyone.
So Carry, now let's shift and talk a little bit, discuss how you and I, how we are helping growers deal with this.
The lab is important. What you know, we talked about why, how it helps us at J.R. Peters. It helps us monitor our products, our quality. But more importantly, we are running a lot of samples every day to help growers understand what they're doing. And I think that's where we're trying to get people to see the benefit of, and it's starting to kind of catch on a little bit, but understanding what your water quality is, what you're starting with. So if you're using RO, super easy. There's nothing in your water. If you're using a well or city water, you could have some beneficial nutrients in there. Let's try and use them. Let's just not throw them away. So in doing that, you're understanding what your water quality is starting with, and then matching a fertilizer that complements that. We see people doing many different things. I see less and less periodic feeding. Sometimes in rural communities, you'll see periodic feeding with injectors. But mostly, in order to kind of be more consistent and save and efficient and save some money on the amount of fertilizer you're using, the idea of constant liquid feeding is where you want to kind of get your mindset in. Just like you were saying, feeding 200 parts per million on a constant basis, could you bump that down to 150, to 125? What impacts does that have to how your plant quality is going to be? There's a lot of research out there, if you want to dig into it, from Cornell and other places, that kind of will show you, you know, I grew in patients at this parts per million, they look like this. I grew it at this, I didn't see a difference if it was grown at 200 parts per million or 125. Hey, it's still a beautiful sellable plant and you're saving money. The lab helps in that it kind of gives you confidence in knowing what you're doing. So if you're feeding at 200 and you reduce to 150, you're saving inherently the amount of powdered fertilizer you're mixing in there. It will stretch your bag to go longer. What you need to make sure is that the nutrients in the root zone is what is enough to support the growth. So doing a media test once a season, just to see where you are, is super helpful. The media test is $40. It's not, you know, you're not writing a huge check here, but it gives you a lot of information to know that, okay, this is going to work for me, and my plant is able to sustain the food that it needs. So we talk to a lot of people growing all different crops to understand the parts per million or EC of the fertilizer they're delivering, and then what nutrients are in the root zone that the plants see. Are they being depleted? And that's how the lab kind of functions in what we do.
I don't want to let go of the importance of having doing some testing. And especially as you and as both of us have said, particularly when we're making adjustments like this. Now, before we even had this conversation, we always recommend to them, if they'd like to check or confirm their injection ratio, to send you a sample of the fertilizer, so that if they think they're applying 200 parts per million of nitrogen, let's confirm that, because injectors are equipment and they can malfunction, right?
Oh yeah. That's, I would say, in the most high value crop situations, we're seeing solution samples, nutrient solution samples, to verify those numbers weekly.
Now, you've mentioned water quality, Carrie, and let me just say, as we run along in the conversation, I just want to make a couple of bookmarks. So if you're recommending testing one's water source, water quality, are we still thinking that annually, you know, once a year is enough to get a handle on the water quality?
Yes, in my opinion, yes.
And I think with your generation of researchers and plant nutritionists, my generation slightly older than yours, I have colleagues, you know, Rick Vitanovitz very well. And Rick was one of the earlier people who started harping on, hey, it's not just the pH in the growing medium, it's the pH, and it's not just pH, but it's the electrical conductivity or the alkalinity of the water. So I think that our younger generation of growers is much more tuned into alkalinity and its influence over pH. And you made the point earlier about watching pH drift, particularly in the hydroponic systems.
From what I see, the younger generation is very in tune to electrical conductivity, soluble salts, total dissolved solids. So speaking to growers that way is useful in knowing what your charge of your nutrient solution is and how that can affect the pH in your root zone. It also allows us to have a conversation that just because you have an EC of 1, you need to understand where that's coming from. You know, it's not just like, okay, they say to feed at an EC of 1, that's what I'm hitting. That isn't going to help you. You need to know what the balance of that is in order to really be delivering the right nutrients, because you could have an EC of 1 when it's mostly sodium and chloride and you're not getting the macro, secondary, and micronutrients that you need.
You mentioned earlier that you have come up with a lower phosphorus solution for the hydroponics, and I'm wondering if you're getting questions, maybe not today because everything's so price focused, but on just fertilizers in general and the environment and using excess nitrogen and phosphorus and the implications. And so is that a conversation you're having, and are there ways to change those formulations?
Yeah, and this is what one of the most fun areas of research we've been doing over the past 2 years is kind of understanding recirculating systems, both in a hydroponic environment and also just thinking about it that way for systems that are draining to waste. So one is, why are we putting all these nutrients in there and they're accumulating and the plants aren't taking it up? Let's try and do that better. Let's try and be a little more efficient. So what we, you know, there's a ton of old school research on the use and levels of phosphorus, and somehow it just keeps getting forgotten. So being able to deliver a formula that has more realistic phosphorus targets specifically, I think is important for both the environmental impact, but it does have a costing impact as well. The nutrient that we're seeing, the raw material that we're seeing the most exponential price increases is always related to phosphorus, monopotassium phosphate, monoammonium phosphate. They're the ones that are the most expensive right now. And honestly, the environmental impact of them into the world isn't wonderful for, you know, how we're living and how we're treating Mother Earth. But also, phosphorus is a limited thing. If we keep going on this path of just using it and not paying attention to what the plants need, we're not going to have it 50 years from now, 75 years from now. And that, for me, as the way I look at how we formulate products, how we set up nutrient targets to grow plants, is important. And we're a small company. We get to make decisions on how we bring our products to market. And that's why this lower phosphorus part A, it's a 6-6-26. So the other part A that everyone knows is 5-12-26, very similar, half the phosphorus, still delivers the same micros, which is like you were saying, Peter, how, you know, if you reduce parts per million, what effects are you going to see? One could be less micros available. So our philosophy is we pay a lot of attention to how many micronutrients are in our formulas to kind of boost that. So you're using less NP, mostly nitrogen and phosphorus, but you still have the balance of the other nutrients that are important.
As I went through my graduate program years ago, the standard irrigation / nutrition regime was, at the time, we were mostly hand watering still. So the recommendation was apply the 200 parts per million nitrogen at every watering and apply enough volume so that we would have about 20% leaching of that container, that geranium or poinsettia. And as you referenced earlier, this was all drained to waste. This was back in the 70s and early 80s as recirculating systems were just being scratched the surface of. And in hindsight, you know, how much progress we've made. As you said eloquently, our younger generation of growers is very tuned into EC in either the hydroponic solution or in the growing medium. So they're used to conserving, and none of them are applying to excess so that we drain to waste 20% of what we're putting on the pot. It's so wasteful. But, you know, that on the good side of it, Carrie, that there was rhyme to the reason, or reason to the rhyme, whatever, in that we wanted to leach something so that we could flush out excess salts and maintain a level of EC in that pot that wasn't going to keep rising, because there was no leaching taking place. So we've made such progress. We've come a long way.
I would also add that I understand that fertilizer is an insurance policy for a lot of growers. If you over-apply, your costs go up, but hopefully you get a great plant or great yield or great outcome. If you under-apply, you save some costs, but you also might have a big reduction in what you have to sell. And so that cost benefit works better for a lot of times to over apply. And I think that our audience probably knows, but the general population does not know, that when you're watching these plants grow and your entire, you know, savings, family, livelihood is on the line and the weather's bad or something, you just want to do something. And so these applications are something you can do. And I think that the psychology of farming and production is often lost. So I love that you're moving towards this place where you're creating formulations that have the benefits to the plants, and that you are doing this work for the growers, as the person with the lab, as the person with the chemistry and alchemy experience, that you are designing these products so when the farmer or grower or producer does apply them, they're getting all the benefits and hopefully not over applying as much for the expensive and the environmental pieces of that.
Yeah, we always say that hopefully after a conversation with our tech team, myself and Caitlin and Cody and Lauren and the rest of the Blue Crew, that the nutrients part of it is just like the easiest part of your life. You never have to think about it. We work with all of the injector companies. I'm super impressed, as always, by H.E. Anderson and Dosatron for just really getting out there with their education side of it. But I really am just glad to connect with growers. And I think this podcast you all are doing is just really a great representation of how we all need to connect and talk about things to make each other's lives better.
Michelle, you always drill right down to essences of issues that we deal with. And your comments about, it's easier to over-fertilize than under-fertilize. So here's where Carrie and I would respond to you, and we would say, okay, this is where the crop scheduler or the grower's expertise comes in, because as Carrie referenced a few minutes ago, the impatience group of plants is a group that we can cheat a bit on. But we also need to know enough about our crop production, Michelle, to know that the petunia group of plants is not the one that we're going to cheat on. The petunia group, if we pull back, is going to have lower quality, as you so eloquently referenced, but the impatience and those other light feeders. So it's not a one size fits all. So that's it for me. Carrie, I want to say thank you for taking time to join us. And Michelle and I would both like you to have final word, anything that you'd like to share before we say goodbye.
Now, again, I appreciate you guys inviting me here. Michelle, it's interesting to hear your perspective. And Peter, as always, it's fun to collaborate with you when we do in life. I just feel lucky. I feel lucky to be able to, you know, interact with all these people growing all different types of plants and deliver, you know, products to them that hopefully have an impact in a positive way. So I know everyone in our company works hard to deliver Jack's and represent our brand well to our customers. And yeah, it's a fun thing. So if you ever see us out there, come say hi to the Jack's crew.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Grower and the Economist. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate it wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps us get discovered by new listeners. If you have questions, concerns, or would like to suggest a podcast topic, please email me at michelle@stratagerm.com. I love hearing from you. Until next time.